Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Thaddeus Bart, Bartholomew.
Oh my God.
What up?
Oh my God. What's up?
Are you in a hotel? Guys? What kind of mahogany you got in there?
No, I'm in my house, man. What are you talking about?
Oh, you know what? That's that money. That money.
Hey, I made a little bit of it.
Right. Don't start that, dog. What year is this for you, Thad?
14. Just
God. Man. Crazy, right?
Man, it's wild. It's wild.
Hey, Road Trippin' fam. We are excited to let you know that Road Trippin' is proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played NBA Daily Fantasy on FanDuel before? Well, check this out. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Why should you play on FanDuel NBA? Well, for one, it is easy to use when it comes to their app. What's not to love about that? But also, for example, they offer different and unique contests across sports in relation to your skill level. Oh yeah, and get this. You can play for big prizes, single game contests for the biggest national matches, and enter contests for as low as 5 cents. That's right, 5 cents. Simply incredible. So again, let's recap. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Enter URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin to play now and get your deposit bonus. That's URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin so they know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hey, Road Trippin' fam. Have you heard of FitBod? FitBod creates a fitness program that continually adapts with new exercises and dynamic intensity that adjusts to how you're progressing, so you'll be challenged to meet your goals at your own pace. No workout is one size fits all. FitBod creates a fitness program that continually adapts to you, so you stay challenged with new exercises, pacing, and intensity based on where you are and where you want to be. As a former athlete, I tend to get bored easily and also lack a full body workout if not trained by a professional. With FitBod, I feel like they consistently keep things new and fresh, as well as target all muscle groups to maximize your full potential at getting stronger. Whether you're exercising 3 days a week, twice a day, every workout is scientifically proven to be better than last. No equipment? No worries. FitBod has bodyweight routines for those looking to get fit at home or on the go. FitBod is super easy to use and even has HD video tutorials to make learning new exercises a breeze. Pick up the pace on your fitness journey with FitBod today, and your future self will thank you. Get 25% off your membership at fitbod.me/roadtrippin. That's 25% off at fitbod.me/roadtrippin. Cheers. Cheers. Welcome into this edition of Road Trippin', presented by FanDuel. I'm your host, Allie Clifton, alongside Channing Frye, Richard Jefferson, and our guest today. Wow, we're going to get into it all because we struggled to just get started. He's a 14-year NBA vet, just finished his 14th season with the Chicago Bulls. It's Thad Young. And before we dive in, hello, Thad, to you. Fun fact, Thad and I are 88 babies. Shout out to the 80s.
Same age. Okay.
We were born in 88. But you, Thad, and Richard share a birthday.
Oh, shit. Oh. Happy June 21st. 21st. Yes. It's a great birthday, isn't it?
A hell of a birthday.
It's a great birthday. Middle of the summer, halfway.
Right next to Father's Day.
Right next to Father's Day, like halfway away from Christmas. So you get, you know, every 6 months, you get a little celebration.
Perfect time.
Perfect timing. And it's like your day, your birthday is the first day of summer. You tell people that, they just get excited about it. Though. It's fucking great.
Is all it really day, cool day. To like have a birthday on Father's Day, especially because you guys are both fathers? You get kind of cheated out.
No, you don't want, it sucks.
No, that's terrible. It is terrible.
It sucks. Like,
I like multiple gifts, so like it's definitely terrible.
No, it's terrible because like Thad, you know this, man. It everybody wants it to be like an extravaganza. It's like it's your birthday and it's Father's Day, and we're gonna. And it's just like yo, I need to chill.
Just chill. Just
chill. Or when it's back to back, because sometimes it does fall where it's like Father's Day one day. And then the next day is your birthday. So it's like, you're like, guys, I get it. This is fun, but like, let's keep it low key.
For sure. I think.
Thad, what's going on in your world right now? You guys were two games out of the play-in game.
Okay.
It's a big deal now.
Did you guys get as high as what, sixth? With maybe like 25 games to go?
Yeah, I think we were like six or whatever, but I mean, we all still had terrible records at that time.
You were okay down the stretch. Were you guys? You were still playing for and hoping for that opportunity, right?
Yeah, I mean, down the stretch, but you know, when you take everything out of your hands when you know you don't win games. I think that was the toughest part. Like we had the pieces and we had the team that can actually go out there and win. It's just a matter of just, you know, us, you know, gelling together, but, you know, no excuses. You know, we didn't do what we were supposed to do. You know, so it is what it is. We're sitting at home.
This ain't that type of podcast. We don't care about the political.
Here's an honest question. How are you, a compliment also. How are you still in the league? You don't fit into a mold of anything. You're not a three. You're not a four. You're not out there jacking up threes.
You're not the most,
every in between of all those, that's you. And it's just like, I remember when you first got in the league, you can't scout you because they're like, okay, he's going hard left. And then they play that left hand, and next thing you know, you do some little scoopty scoop shot going left. You're like, man, shit. Coach goes, don't let him go left. I go, coach, he's behind the backboard going left. How did your game evolve like that? And when did you say, okay, I can't fit into a mold. I just got to be me.
I mean, I think that kind of started like at the beginning of my career. Just saying I'm going to do whatever it takes to be on the court. When I first started in the league, I didn't play like the first 16, 17 games. But I was the 12th pick. I was like, shit, I'm going to be playing. Yeah. like what the hell?
You were in Philly, right?
Yeah, I was in Philly. Yeah. So I go to Mo Cheeks. I'm like, yo, why am I playing? He's like, look, you're going to play some games. You're not going to play some games. So they were playing Jason Smith in front of me.
Yeah.
And he was like the 20-something pick. And I'm like, man, fuck this. I was like, I'm about to tell coach, man, look, at the end of the season, you're going to be starting me. So I was like, fuck it, I told him. And then he was like, you're going to have to show me. So, like, one game, we played Portland. This one, Portland had Brandon Roy.
And, remember you barbecued us.
Yeah. And we actually, like, we were down 20, like, 25 points. And then we came back with me playing, like, a small ball four. And I was guarding LaMarcus, and I had a pretty good game against him. So ever since then, I had been starting. So I was like, fuck it, I ain't going back. But then I get to like my 34th year, and then shit, Doug was like, hey, I need you to come off the bench. And I'm like, no, fuck that. Like, I ain't trying to come off the bench. And he was like, I promise you, if you come off the bench, you're gonna get paid. So I was like, all right, fuck it. So I came off the bench, became like the sixth man, and then I just kind of learned how to play in between and just do everything. Like, and I realized like throughout my course of my career, I could be like a really good intangible guy that can do every single thing pretty good, but not overly great, but it's still enough to help the team win. Like I'm like that person in between that's going to help everybody become on the court. Like they come in force.
Yeah.
Your teammate, like, let's stop being humble. Your teammate this year called you the MVP of your team in season 14 because of Two Channing's point, like what you can bring to the table, all of the little things.
Yeah, I mean, Zach is like little brother to me. I had him as a rookie in Minnesota. So, you know, we spent a lot of time together just talking and me helping him, like, you know, figure out situations on the court. But This year, I thank Zach for that. But, I just try to go out there and just play, just make sure that I'm doing everything in the locker room to help these young guys because, like we were just talking about before the podcast started, a lot of the young guys, they don't actually know how to play. So they're in the process of learning how to actually play this NBA game. And the ball is just being rolled out and they're going through their bumps and bruises. So I'm like that common force to kind of help them through them bumps and bruises. Like we had a really good rookie this year. I think he's going to be a stud, Patrick Williams. Yeah. He did a hell of a job this year, but he have games where he gets lost. So like at the end of the season, like I spent a lot of time like molding him and trying to tell him like, look, when Zach and Vooch don't play, this is your fucking team. Like you need to go out there and you need to like show. So I'm breaking off plays and shit, running him into the post, like doing all types of shit to get him going to make sure like he knows like you're the man or you're going to be the man. You're going to have to hold this franchise down. So like just getting guys to understand where their roles are and how they kind of fit in. Like I know I'm like, I'm past the prime of my career, but I can still play at a high level. But it's my job to go out there and help these guys along the way as well as going out there and doing the things I need to do for myself.
No, that man, dude, that's so well said. But like, okay, so because I love the role, because me, I got to that role where it was like I was a rookie and I came off the bench and I was like, I need to be a starter. And then I started and then back to the bench role, then it goes back to the vet role. And it's like, when did you realize that? Like, when did you realize? Okay, now say that, when did you realize? When did you realize that in order for me to play as long as you have, that you needed to take on another role? This wasn't just about how many points I score, how many rebounds I get, but it's about what I can contribute off the court, what I can contribute like as a veteran and as a mentor. Like, when did you kind of start to figure that out? Because those are the individuals that have the longest careers, not just guys that just play. Like, yeah, there's a LeBron's, Chris Paul's, but the guys that play like Channing, myself, yourself, it's because around like year 8, 9, you're like, I need to be a vet.
Right. You know? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that vet. It definitely. Right.
I'm going to say probably I started to realize a little bit more when I got to Indy. Okay. I got to Indy and we had so many vets on the team that it was just so many voices. Mm-hmm. And obviously, when you have so many voices, sometimes like, the main voice gets overshadowed or, everybody's kind of talking over each other. So everybody's not on the same page. So I got to Indy and we had me, Jeff Teague, Rodney Stuckey, Monte Ellis, CJ Miles. These are all vets. L. Best. Jefferson.
9 years.
Yeah. L. Jefferson, Aaron Brooks. Like we had a Paul George, had a veteran team. So it was just like, it was just a lot. And then, we was dealing with Nate as well. We all know how Nate is. So it was like,
tell us about Nate. Tell us. No, because Nate McMillan, obviously he unceremoniously left Indiana after being successful and dealing with a bunch of injuries, goes to Atlanta, assistant coach really quickly, takes over for Pierce and they vault. And it's so funny because there's two Nate McMillans. There's two Nate McMillans. There's the Nate McMillan is a great coach, but then there's also the what the fuck Nate McMillan.
Is that the one that Channing, you shared your experience?
Yes, Channing hates him. Channing,
I don't hate him. No.
Let me phrase that. He was a lot of Channing's inspiration for growth as a basketball player.
No. The league, he wanted me to be something that he knew I wasn't. And so he judged me on that. I'd be like, in practice, I'm shooting threes and my spacing with LaMarcus is great. And he's like, no, I need you to be Joe Prisbilla. And I'm like, I'm not going to get paid this way. The thing about Nate is he establishes culture and responsibility for your role very quickly. The thing that gets messed up is once he establishes that, it's hard for him to let go of the reins, right? He wants to practice 2.5 hours every single day. And there's no, Brandon Roy has a knee the size of a grapefruit. And he's like, Brandon, I need you to practice it. Brandon's like, if you practice today, I can't play for a week. So you got, and Brandon was just like, dude, we can't do this. But Nate is like this, like a metronome. He doesn't care. Win or lose, it's like this. And then it just, there's no communication. Now, I think he's going to have to get better because he's playing with a young team.
He's way better now.
Yeah,
he's way better now. Like, I had like my first, my first. So you know, so I played for Indy 3 years. So my first to the second year was like astronomical. Like you, like this a whole different coach. Yeah. Like the first year I got there, I was like, oh, we not gonna last.
He's like, we ain't gonna make it.
We're not gonna last. Like the way we practicing, the way we going out, like we was having like 2.5-3 hour practice. Just like you said, I was like, oh shit,
defense, like, this fun practice.
Well, that's where he earned his money in the league as a player himself. Was on that end of the floor. Yeah.
Right.
He averaged, listen to the game last night, he averaged what, like 5 points as a player?
No, but Nate McMillan was a good player. Like, I don't know. I watched, I like got a chance to watch him play and remember the Seattle Seahawks, Supersonics teams that he was on. I know, right? I messed up. It's the whiskey at 11. I remember those teams that he was on, and they were like defensive minded. It was the Gary Paytons and the Sean Kemps and the Detlef Schrempf, and they were just aggressive. Yeah, they were aggressive and they were mean, and they bullied the Western Conference to like the best record, and they go against MJ and the Bulls. Like, if you're the most dominant team in the conference, I feel like they had the best record that year. Our second best record behind the Bulls.
They were nasty.
Nate McMillan has – Luke Ridenour tells me this story, right? And I'm about to rat out some people, so hear me out.
Here we go, Tekashi.
Yeah, listen, Tekashi. Listen, so Luke Ridenour tells me, he goes, man, Richard, this was years and years ago when he was in Seattle, when Nate was in Seattle. He's like, Richard, it's so funny. He was like, we had back-to-back – contact practices, and they were like both like 2.5 hours long, and I don't know if it was Ray Allen or Rashad Lewis, but one of the vets on the team called the NBA and told on him. They called the NBA and told on him. It was like the second or third day of practice. They called the NBA and told on him. Luke Ridenour says Nate McMillan comes to practice and is like, so apparently we have guys here that don't want to work.
The first thing he said, oh, we gonna work.
Yeah.
Every single day. I'd be like, oh shit. Like, oh, let me go on and get my clothes laced up. Like,
yeah.
This shit is crazy.
He goes, apparently we have guys don't want to work. I got a call from the Players Association saying that we're going too hard and doing contact. So obviously, like, but it was like, right. Like one of these vets was like, nah, dude. Cause okay. Back when I first came in as a rookie, probably you two were probably very, very close. You could still have two practices a day. Both days were contact, and you would typically have two a day Monday, two a day Wednesday or Tuesday, one practice on Wednesday, two a day on Thursday. And then what would the coach say on Friday? If you go hard in the morning practice, you have Friday.
Hey, we started off with the conditioning test. So
What are these conditioning tests?
I'm a monster, I ain't gonna lie.
the 5x10?
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, the 5x10 and no bank time.
What's 5x10?
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right?
Five of them.
And
five up and backs.
Five up and backs. Yeah. And then Biggs got a minute and five-ish. Guards had to be under a minute. And then, let's say I got mine in 103 in Phoenix. If I got mine in 103, you could bank 2 seconds. So, if you got really tired, you could have, by the end, you would have 5 or 6 extra seconds. So, you wouldn't have to sprint. But to have the best parking spot, you would want to bank the most time. Obviously, Steve Nash, Grant Hill, and Goron were crushing people, banking, 30 seconds. I mean, it was ridiculous. But me, I was like, No. And how many seconds I got left? I'm walking that last joint.
That joint is wild. I'm not even gonna lie. Aaron Brooks almost died. Like, he couldn't practice for a month after that shit. I was like, yo, this is crazy. And then we practice right after. Like, we go right into drills.
What if
you
fail?
You gotta do it again the next day.
You gotta do it again. You can't get into training camp until you do it.
And that was the Pat Riley. Byron Scott was like this. We had this thing called Easy Run.
Oh, Byron Scott.
Byron Scott. I had Byron Scott, like my first year I came in, the year before, they had like 4 guys, maybe 5 guys that were injured from how hard training camp was. So they went to him and was like, dude, you can't have your whole roster banged up before training camp ends. So he got better, but I used to like, and the best thing about the conditioning drill is when you become a vet, you start to figure out how to avoid it. So I remember the conditioning, like D Mill, cause that was one of the last plays. D Mill was like, "Hey Rich," he was the trainer in Cleveland, and he goes, "Hey Rich, we got a conditioning drill." So I would show up right after Labor Day, right? Like everybody show up for that week. Then I'd be like, "Hey, I got to go back home to get some stuff and finish packing, whatever." Then I would show up 2 days before practice. So I would show up the day before. I'd be like, "Oh, my kids were in school." And I'd show up the day before practice so that there was no conditioning drill. And
I had this feeling, you guys are grown men. You get paid to work out. And like the intimidation, I want to just say this. So Byron Scott, my first year with Cleveland, Byron Scott was the coach. And I remember doing media day, our sit downs, and Luke Walton was in his last year in Cleveland. And just like seeing like the sweat drip down his face of what was to come starting with training camp. I'm like, don't you get paid to like do this? Like, it's no. really that hard. He was scared.
Did you hear the story of Gronk? Gronk would go and do sprints. Right. But apparently he would change the shirt that he was wearing on the same day. But then he would send those videos to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers so that it looked like he was working out on multiple days, but he was just switching his shirt. And so it looked like it was like different days. And it was like, dude, because at the end of the day, there's a fine balance of knowing your body, knowing who you are. And with all due respect to coaches, sometimes they lose sight in that. Right. Like right. back to like D Mill. When I first show up year 15, he's doing all these measurements. He's poking and prodding me. And he was like, "Well, Richard, we got to get the measurements of your quad if you have a knee injury." And I was just like, "D, if I'm 35 years old, if I have a knee injury, I'm retiring. I'm done. Like, I'm not rehabbing for 7 months to come back for year 16. I'm barely holding on as it is. Hey, leave me the fuck alone."
Rich, they were doing that to me my last year. And they were like, "Channing, your body fat's pretty high." I was like, "What is it?" They're like 12. I said, no, that's about right. I'm about business. But you know, I have a few drinks on the side. I'm good. I'll work my way into it. I don't need to be any skinny. I go D-Mill. I have to guard the biggest guys. I can't be that skinny. I'm like an NBA sumo wrestler. I got to pack the pounds up.
Hey, I do. Hey, during this season, I was like, "Look, man, if y'all want me to come in this weight room," I said, "my weights is me having to go out here and push these big motherfuckers around. That's my weight." I said, "You're not going to kill me in the weight room. I'm not coming in there. If I am coming in there, it's to get my body fat, which I ain't got very much."
You were one of the lucky ones. Like me, it was a constant.
Oh yeah, right. For sure. We know how we're supposed to feel, which is the difference, right? And to get back on that conditioning test, Allie, I went to a team, right? So do you know on that 5x10, okay, you get twice the time that it takes you as your break. So if it's 105, you get 210. I played on a team where the guy said, "Your break is as long as it takes you to run it." So the only three dudes that got it were Victor Oladipo, Tobias Harris, and Kyle O'Quinn. But he had practiced that drill more than almost actually practicing basketball. So look, me and Luke Ridenour.
Love Luke Ridenour. Did you ever play with Luke Ridenour? Thaddeus?
Nah, Luke goes,
but Luke would condition. Luke would play basketball for hours. He would just play full court one-on-one with anybody, right? He'd be like, "This is my conditioning," which I get. So coach was like, "Hey, you guys aren't in shape." Luke goes, "What do you mean I'm not in shape?" He goes, "All I do is play basketball. I'm in basketball shape." He goes, "Forget you. I hate this drill." So he goes, "How many days they got to make it?" And they were like, "Well, you got four. And so you got to do it four times." And Luke's like, "All right." So the first day, me and Luke go out there. One, two, we get two done. We look at each other. We're like, "Yeah, this is it." We go, "We'll see you tomorrow." Meanwhile, Booch, he got to four and it was like 30 seconds. This dude turns around, barfs on the court, and they're like, "Ready to go." Blah, run and runs. I said, "You know what? That's not me. No, that's not me. He finishes. No. I said, that ain't it. The last day, me and Luke still are with the trainer. It's Sunday. I bring my son and me and him are just jogging this thing. Like, this is the dumbest thing we've ever had to do in our entire career. And this is not going to help us win. It was the most stupid. And we were trash that year.
Hey,
you know, like, all this conditioning for this trash. Hey,
we had to help Al Jefferson get through that motherfucker. we had to help.
There is no way Al big ass got through that.
Never.
Hey, we were dragging his big ass through it. Then we had to help Lance Stevenson get through that motherfucker.
Well, like,
oh yeah. Well, like, now he's different. Now he's different.
And then Evan Turner, when I was in Philly, he got like halfway through towards like, he was like, you know what? This and walked out the gym and went home.
No, like, man, it's just these, like, sometimes, man. No, because there's things that, like, my thing with trainers, every trainer is like, oh, this drill is hard. And it's like, yes, I can create some shit that's fucking hard. You're exactly talking about the professional athletes, like the best athletes in the world. And we're like, what the fuck are we doing here with this? Right? Are you trying to prove a point? Like when Scott Skiles, with all due respect, because Scott is a great coach, but great he would coach. Be having like tape shoot arounds and shit.
Yes.
And you're like,
duh. I was there in Orlando with him.
Yeah, you tape
shoot around.
And then like some of these conditioning tests, Scott got mad because he did these conditioning tests. But we guys started showing up like the day of, weren't even in basketball shoes. They were in pure running shoes. He was like, I see some guys out here in running shoes, but like, just go put your basketball shoes on. Like, it's not going to be. And it's just like, all right, Scott, you know. But again, Nate McMillan, Byron Scott, they're all from the same era. These are the same coaches.
Yeah, they cut from that same cloth. Like,
yeah.
Right.
That's going crazy.
But what's crazy is like Andre Miller failed. Remember, it was like, I live in Portland. Andre Miller said, I'm not doing this conditioning test. And they're like, well, how do you stay in shape all summer? He goes, oh, I roller skate.
Yeah. No, hey, yes. No bullshit. Hey, Andre Miller, people used to tell me all the time when I played with Andre Miller, like my first couple years in Philly, they was like, yo, I seen Andre Miller in Camden at the skating ring. I was like, what? The skating ring? And he came in one day with his skates over his shoulder, like, yo, after practice, I'm going skating. Like, so we need to hurry this shit up. I'm like, whoa, like what?
Like roller skates or roller blades?
Roller skates, like a roller rink. Skate. Roller skate.
Roll like, bounce.
You did that for conditioning?
Shout out Great Skate.
Oh, Great Skate was hidden back in the
day. Yeah, you remember Great Skate yet? Great Skate was the roller rink. We used to have all of our junior high dances there. But Great Skate was on the west side. Aww. What was you doing all the way on the west side, Channing?
Don't worry about where I moved, dog. I was shaking and moving.
The west side of Phoenix.
The NBA playoffs are here, and you'll be in hoops heaven betting all the action on FanDuel Sportsbook. There are so many exciting matchups, and FanDuel is taking that excitement to another level. Because new and existing users, all customers, can bet risk-free throughout the playoffs. Once you have a FanDuel Sportsbook account, you can bet one same-game parlay risk-free every week. That means you can combine multiple bets for an even bigger win. And if you don't win, you'll get up to $10 back. The most intriguing matchup to me, looking at the current odds on FanDuel Sportsbook right now, I'd have to say the Clippers coming out of the West at plus 350. Not only have they won two in a row to tie up the series at 2-2, but with the news regarding the health or lack thereof with Luka Doncic, I'll take the Clippers in those odds. Basketball fans, now is the perfect time to give FanDuel a shot. New users can still get up to $1,000 back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with promo code ROADTRIPPIN to bet the NBA playoffs risk-free. That's code ROADTRIPPIN, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Disclaimer, 21 and older and present in New Jersey. Risk-free bet for the first online real money wager only and refund issued at non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Same game parlay refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile/web. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. The right outfit can bring out something special in us. And with Indochino, creating the best look yet could be more affordable than you think. It may have been a while since the last time you had an excuse to dress up, but whenever that next chance is, make the absolute most of it with Indochino. I will say, even though my shopping experience for a loved one of mine happened online, the efficiency, experience, and intimate way in which Indochino's team was, it made our time spent shopping so worth it. My brother not only feels confident, but received exactly the look, fit, and style he had envisioned. Every piece is made to your exact measurements, and you can customize every detail. Choose everything about your suit, from the fabric, lapel, monogram, and statement linings. You can create a suit that fits you and your style perfectly. The best part, Indochino suits start at just $3.99 with all customizations included. Shop for your next best look or book a virtual style consultation at Indochino.com. Right now, you can get $50 off any purchase of $3.99 or more by using code ROADTRIPPIN' at checkout. That's $50 off a purchase of $3.99 or more at Indochino.com. Promo code ROADTRIPPIN'. Hey, Roadtrippin' fam, have you heard of FitBod? FitBod creates a fitness program that continually adapts with new exercises and dynamic intensity that adjusts to how you're progressing, so you'll be challenged to meet your goals at your own pace. No workout is one size fits all. FitBod creates a fitness program that continually adapts to you, so you stay challenged with new exercises, pacing, and intensity based on where you are and where you want to be. As a former athlete, I tend to get bored easily and also lack a full body workout if not trained by a professional. With FitBod, I feel like they consistently keep things new and fresh, as well as target all muscle groups to maximize your full potential at getting stronger. Whether you're exercising 3 days a week, twice a day, every workout is scientifically proven to be better than last. No equipment? No worries. FitBod has bodyweight routines for those looking to get fit at home or on the go. FitBod is super easy to use and even has HD video tutorials to make learning new exercises a breeze. Pick up the pace on your fitness journey with FitBod today, and your future self will thank you. Get 25% off your membership at fitbod.me/roadtrippin'. That's 25% off at fitbod.me/roadtrippin'.
Wait, Thad, we talked about some crazy teammates, okay? So let's talk about, number one, the best teammate you think you've ever had in pure talent, and then talk about the funniest yet slash craziest teammate you've ever had. I always like those two things.
Oh, man. Damn.
So you had to pick one teammate.
Who was the funniest? Who was the funniest? Yeah,
funniest.
One of the funniest teammates I ever had was I'm probably gonna say Kyle O'Quinn.
Yo, he is so funny. He's the funniest dude of all time.
Kyle's funny as man. He's probably one of the funny. Yeah, he'd be on the end of the bench, like, and he'd be like, "Look, all I need is 7 minutes, and I'm good. Like, I'll be good for the game." Then, like, somebody get in foul trouble, he'd be like, "You KO down here." I was like, yo, I was like, this dude is wild.
Hey, like, he would do that, like, in Orlando.
Yo, he seems like, you know, a dude. Like, I believe you guys because I've never played with him, but like, I would see his interactions with people, or I would just say this up to him in passing, and he seemed funny as shit, right? Like, he seemed funny, but he can't jump. He can't really move.
But he can block shots.
But he knows how to block shots. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's just like this old, he got this old man game. He got this old man game. So when you see him with a beard in the old man game, it's just
hey, that made me laugh. He'd be like, one thing I can do, he said, I can block some shots, I can rebound. And he said, I got this midi twerking every time. I was like, this dude is, hey, he is so funny, man. He is
so funny. Hey, KO one time was getting frustrated because our starting lineups were crazy in Orlando. And then they were trying to figure out times between Aaron Gordon, myself, Vooch, him, Dwayne Dedman. So all those guys are just trying to figure out time, whatever. And I was just like, okay, I see what the writing's on the wall here. I'm just here to be the scapegoat, right? So KO one time was mad, and they were like, KO, you're supposed to be the bottom man. So all day in practice, KO is yelling, I'm the bottom man. I'm not better, man.
Hey, that is him all day.
So loud. Who's the bottom man? Who's the bottom man? I'll be it. Like, I'm on the side. Like, I'm sweating right now because I remember it was supposed to be said, we had lost a grip in a row. So already people was hot, right? And KO's just like, we're doing this drill, and you know, just a shell drill. KO's like, who's the bottom man? Who's the bottom man? I'm the bottom man.
Yeah. And the worst part about playing with Channing or myself is that if we find some shit funny, we ain't hiding it. We ain't hiding
no
it.
No hiding it.
Like,
no hiding it.
Yeah. And then everyone starts looking at me or him and just being like, funny. I'm like, nah, this shit's funny. I'm sorry.
It's so funny. It's him, I laugh at the worst things.
Between him and Lance Stevenson, yeah, them two fun, two of the funny things.
But yeah, obviously enough people know shit about Lance Stevenson that
right.
He's gotta be funny. That's
so,
a good one.
So the best teammate, like if you had to pick one guy to go one-on-one versus the rest of the league that was your teammate, who would that be? Like pure shit. Talent, that dude, just a bucket getter.
I mean, shit, I play with him now, Zach. Like Zach is like phenomenal scorer. Like he different. Like you, like there's no stopping from scoring. He gonna get his 20-25. Like I think, like for him, it's just a matter of taking the next step defensively. He got to become a two way player. He's working at it, becoming a two way player. Billy's pushing him. I'm pushing him. So, like, but as far as like scoring bucket for bucket, oh, he can get to it.
Yeah,
and make him at a high rate, like a high clip.
Like he'll get, once he get going, he ain't seeing nothing but the rim.
No,
that's it. Like, yeah. it's crazy. Like, you'd be like, oh my God. Like, I'd be sitting there, like, you know, I'm old and shit. So now I might slide to the back and go, like, try to get a little warm up in before I check in and shit. So I leave and he got like five, and then I come back, got 20. You like, God damn. Like, she was like four minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, who was the vet, man? Because now, obviously, what people don't understand about our league is that you don't learn how to be a vet from being in the league. That's one part of it. Learning how to be a vet from being in the league and seeing a lot. That's one part of it. The other part is you learn how to be a vet because you were around a vet, right? And you were like, okay, see, this is how OGs move. Right. Like they look out for people. They make sure guys, you know, they give them a little wisdom. Don't spend your money here. Don't do that. Save your dollars. Right. You know, take care of your chicken, you know. But who was your vet that you look back on and you were like, man, he really sped up my process probably about 2-3 years.
Man, honestly,
it can be more than one.
Yeah, I play with so many of them. Like shit. Like I play with Kevin Ollie. I play with Theo Ratliff, Danielle Marshall.
You old as shit, dog.
Man, God.
Oh, no, we are. We're 33. Like,
yeah, like, no, but I'm talking about when you think about that, the names he just said, those, like, Kevin, did he, who did you say? Kevin, not what? Did you say Kevin Willis?
Ollie. No,
Kevin Ollie.
Kevin Ollie. No, who else did you say?
Danielle Marshall, Theo Ratliff.
Theo Ratliff. Theo Ratliff.
You're a one and done, aren't you?
Theo Ratliff came in the 80s.
Yeah, he's a one and done. So he came straight.
Theo Ratliff played in 89.
Hey, let me tell you this.
Wait a second. Theo he played Ratliff in 89 and he was your vet?
I was one.
Nah. Theo Ratliff, wait, when did Theo Ratliff come in the league, though? Real talk.
Yeah, I was Ratliff about to say, like,
contract years of any player I've ever seen Googling in my life.
He's on Google.
Theo Ratliff would average 6 blocks on his contract year, and other than that, keep it on chill mode.
Hey, no bullshit. He was still blocking shots with two hands on the backboard and shit when we were playing.
Yeah.
I was like, God damn. Elton Brand was probably the one that kind of speeded up my process, though.
So he was a beast. Nobody talks about him enough. Like,
that's my guy, man.
Monster, man.
He came in. I lied. He came in 95.
I was gonna say
that's an exaggeration.
I said 89. But he played at Wyoming. He was at Wyoming in 1991. That is who Thaddeus Young played with. He was in college in 91. He was a freshman. And you're playing. You're like, oh yeah. So one of my vets.
Grant Hill was in college in 89.
Geez, was he really?
Wasn't he?
Google.
Every time you talk about Grant Hill, Channing, I think it's so cool. And then like the other day when he was doing that game and he shouted you out, because I feel like it's such a, like, to your point, like so many years between, yet you played with like one of.
But that's the,
he went to college 1990 to 1994.
Yeah.
You're so old. Grant was the man. Grant was like the guy for me who was like, all right, Channing, that's not going to work. You can do this. We got to do this. Hey, if I'm here at 8, you don't have to be here at 8, but you got to be here at 8:15, right? Like, because like, I got stuff I got to take care of. I go first and then you get to do you. But then he was also like, man, you got to enjoy this. Like, he had come through his injuries and just taking care of your body. And then everything he was doing on the side, like Grant has so many little things that people don't even know. He has the largest collection.
Art collection.
He's now head of USA Basketball. He's part owner of the Hawks. He's, you know, he has his own venture funds. He's doing like, so I was just trying to pick his brain. And just over the years, I literally text him. I was like, dude, you are trash on TV. And so that's what gave me a shout out. I was like, why are you checking your phone on the air? But like, I think it's, it does as players, when you have vets who also have the ear of the coach, right? Things go better. Like if the vet can say, hey coach, we need a day. Like we need the guys to go to dinner together. We need to do this. Or he says, hey coach, F all these drills. We need to just go hoop. Like Steve and Grant were those guys. Same with Jason Richardson. And Amari shockingly was the guy who was like,
oh yeah, I played with Jason Richardson too. Great vet.
Yes.
Great vet.
Yeah. Can I ask you all this question? Because we've heard Shaq talk about it and you guys have talked about a variety of coaches already just on this podcast. Thad, really quick. Did you play with Hoiberg too in Chicago?
No.
Okay. So you just had Hoiberg.
I came in right after he left.
Right after that. Okay. What makes in your eyes, all of you, a great NBA coach? And I ask this because I don't want you to go into like, it depends on who your team is and but from that, but just like what makes,
because that was the same, that literally the shit that I was going to say, like, depends on who your team is. And but
really?
I think it does, man, because like coaching is so situational, right? And it's like, you can't compare Greg Popovich to Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson, with all due respect, never really developed players. That wasn't his thing. Like, he developed greatness, but he didn't like draft a guy that you saw turn into a Manu Ginobili. He didn't draft a guy that you saw turn into a Tony Parker. He didn't draft a guy that you saw turn into a Kawhi Leonard. That's a very different coach than it is to be like, I got Michael Jordan, I got Scottie Pippen, I got Dennis Rodman, but I got to mentally figure out how to bring these guys together. Those are
different. So I guess that's my point. Like, is it one that's willing to listen to the players? Is it one that can balance knowing that they are the coach yet will take into account their, you know what I'm saying?
I think they got to have like, a coach has to have that fine line between the players, the front office, and, you know, because obviously the front office is asking certain things as well. Like, oh, we got young guys. Like, we need to see how they gonna develop and how they gonna play throughout the course of games. And so now you got to figure out how to put those guys into the game without losing the game. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you.
There's a reason why, there's a reason why the Warriors went ham once Wiseman got hurt, and that's not a disrespect to Wiseman, but once they no longer kind of decided to play him and they went all small ball, they kind of took off. Because it was like that fine balance of like, we got to play Wiseman because this dude can go, but he doesn't really fit the mold of Steph and like Dre.
And so only played 45 games in his entirety of basketball, college, high school, and the pros. It's a fact.
Yeah.
He's played less than 50 games total. So like the way his brain is moving, he's thinking, oh, I should be on the nail. While Draymond's like, oh, they're just running this loop two reverse counter, you know, like, okay. Right. So like, he's thinking hands up, who's this guy? And everyone else on that team is like, boom, 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 boom. He's thinking like his processor needs to, he got to watch so much film and slow the game down. That's why they need to play fast.
So that's on Steve Kerr though, to make that decision.
Well, sometimes it's management telling you got to play the young guys like that. James Wiseman is nice. James Wiseman, this is not a disrespect to James Wiseman.
No, that motherfucker can hoop. He can go.
He can go. And he don't even know what he's doing at that. He's just like, athleticism.
That's how I feel about Patrick Williams on our team.
Like, yeah.
With the 4 pick, they stole him one. Like, I don't know how you seen this motherfucker at Florida State coming off the bench playing limited minutes to get him to the league and him doing with some of the shit that he does. Like, some of the shit that he does, like, he thinks he's just doing it. And we like, this shit is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I would say
thing in the NBA.
Yeah, coaches, I would say coaches, Ali, are like great players. The way Michael Jordan dominated versus the way Larry Bird dominated versus the way Magic Johnson dominated, the way LeBron dominated. They're all great. they just do it in different ways, or they have special skills or special attributes. Some know how to relate to players. Some know how to develop players. Some know, like, I think T. Lou is a very good manager of talent, yeah. Right? Like T. Lou can talk to Bron and he knows his basketball IQ and he can get these guys together, where other, like, I wouldn't consider T. Lou at this point in time a high level development guy, because he's never had a group like the Chicago Bulls. Or, you know, remember David Blatt? They brought in David Blatt to coach Kyrie, Tristan, and all the young dudes, and Andrew Wiggins. Then Bron's like, I'm coming home, I'm coming back, I'm coming. And all of a sudden, there was like, all right, well, Mr. Blatt, we appreciate your service here, but, like, we're going to go a different route. And that's, like, not to say that the man can't coach, but when it came to, we went from, we're going to develop our young top five picks, three of them, to, oh no, we need to win a championship. That's a completely different skill set.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? So
I think for me in coaching, it's like the biggest thing is, does the coach have the ear? Like, is the coach going to adjust his system or develop guys within his system so that people can believe in it? Do they feel like they have a chance to get better? So, like, Thibs didn't work in Minnesota because he's like, I need you guys to play my style. And they were like, dude, we've been all-stars. Like, we're not playing that way. I'm going to get these minutes regardless, even if I suck on defense. And it just didn't work out. Jimmy Butler went to Miami. Thibs goes to New York, and those dudes are hungry. So they're like, hey, we believe in whatever you think. Hey, Julius Randle, you want to shoot? Guess what? You can shoot every single time. We don't care. And that's how we're going to build around. So Thibs goes, if you want to get that, all you have to do is play good defense. So the communication between the coach, your 15th, and your first guy has to be a straight line, right? Mm-hmm. And why do you think Spoelstra works in Miami? Now, obviously, this year they're a little tired, they're a little beat up, and I just think they just don't have enough talent this year. But Spoelstra can say to Jimmy Butler, you're bullshitting. Or he can say, Jimmy, go ahead, you can coach, because basically you and I are speaking the same language. I shouldn't have to coach effort or coach little things. I should be able to manage the game. And yeah, when a right. coach can become a manager, then he's really hit that next step. Like Rick Carlisle is a manager.
Yeah.
He manages the game, yeah, right? Bro. And at the end of the day,
that's what Nate does. Nate's a really good micromanager. Like when you see teams, all the teams that he's had at the end of games, like they micromanage games because he knows how to like slow the game down and get to kind of play under control, as opposed to just, I'm gonna just let y'all go. Yeah. And that's why we were good at Indy. I mean, like we just hated
y'all's teams.
We played hard defensively. We had a lot of dolls that knew how to go out there and play together. And then we knew how to manage games at the end. Now, obviously we ran into like Cleveland them 2 years or whatever, and then Boston. Goddamn, y'all got Brun. What the fuck?
Come on. I know, right?
Hey, guess what? Like,
real good.
We were. Oh my god, that's amazing.
The problem was,
let's not forget,
my team didn't have two of me. If I was out there guarding, goddamn, it would have been a little different. I don't know if he would have got 40.
Oh my God!
You guys were up 22.
He would have got. He would have got like 36.
You were up 22.
He would have got like.
Guess what? They put the
not 40. He would have got like 30.
Hey,
put the snipers in.
One thing for sure. My matchup was straight. I took care of my matchup.
Who was your matchup?
Kevin.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, that's not fair. That's not fair.
Whoa! Come on, man. He was averaging what? 19, 20.
No. What I'm trying to say is that.
No, Thad, you're right.
No, that. This is what I want to try to say. Yes, Kevin's our guy.
I love Kevin.
No. This is not a knock. This is not a knock. Because look, Kevin is very good, multi-time all-star. Everybody understand this. But this is the thing. Kevin Love against you, we know we got to give Kevin some help. Kevin versus Paul Millsap or Al Horford, it's like, Kevin, go to fucking work, dude. Because he can't light them up. Those dudes ain't got the – and those dudes – and look, Paul Millsap, all-star. Al Horford, all-star. But that's more of a matchup that favors Kevin. Like, when you would get going, they'd be like, Richard, you ready? And it's like, get this fucking lefty weirdo. I got to go chase him.
But it's not like a game. You can't work on what you do because you moved. I don't know what you're doing.
No. It's different. But let me say this. Did you got, wait, I think, okay, so you're 14, so you did. So you played against Antoine Jameson.
Oh,
yeah, for sure. I watched a lot of his games. Like that.
Dog,
like,
hated the weirdest. Okay, that's what I'm saying. So you knew his game.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you guys had a similar, like when you would score shots or he would hit shots, like, especially Antoine Jameson really kind of fucked with me because I would think he's taking a bad shot, but it was his shot. And then I would look over the bench like, what do you want me to do? He's seeing like one-legged random runner floaters.
Oh.
And it's like...
And they're running the Princeton offense. So he's dribble handoff, then coming back, getting a screen. Then he's shooting these little flick things. And
I
then
hated the Princeton.
I love it. Once you get like, I love it. Who did you play? You had Eddie Jordan. Who did you have?
I had Eddie Jordan my third year. The Princeton didn't work because we had too many like dolls that need to run. And mm-hmm. you're trying to like have us out there like cutting and moving and shit. And then you got Fords out with fucking Elton and Sam Dellenberg on the
that don't work.
That don't work. You know what I'm saying? You can't put them on the Samuel elbows and say, throw a backdoor pass.
Fords out reverse. Fords out reverse. That was my shit. Dude. I used to get that play.
I hated that play.
Fords out reverse. Oh, loved it. That was my favorite play. It was Fords out. It was God. What was it? High post, low post. That
Chin,
shit was
Chin pull here.
Chin was great. Chin was
I love Chin action.
So eventually they took away it as like a system offense, and then it just became they had plays. Chin is a good play, but Chin Fords out
Chin is amazing because I mean we played Detroit. That was my first year. We played Detroit, and they messed up with Chin.
Yeah.
That's when I first learned. I was like. Chin, like I was like, I'm just coming to it. I'm 19 years old, so I'm like
Chin's a monster because you the thing about him is like if you do it right and you get going, you can score on the exact same play five different ways, and you don't know how to stop it because you're like, okay, he hit him on the back cut lob. Okay, the back cut lob, we got to take away. Oh shit, that leaves a corner open. Oh shit, they just hit the corner three. Okay, then we got to stay this. Okay, well, we're going to help from this. Oh so damn, the high pick and roll came and got you because it was a back screen into a high pick and roll. So now
you're
just,
late as the big man. If you went to help, then you were late, and now you got somebody coming downhill. But then everyone's in rotation, and then now the strong side dude or the weak side Ken dude is there.
What
are you guys making basketball seem so complicated?
No, it's not. But what we're saying
is
that
really simple.
There's certain like so the Princeton, the Princeton offense.
That's probably one of the simplest plays ever, too.
Yeah. So the Princeton offense is like the triangle offense. For the people that don't know, Princeton has their own basketball offense. It's like famous in basketball. Just like it's just like what is it called? Not motion.
UCLA?
No, not the UCLA cut, but like the, oh God, what's that thing that everybody runs and I never ran it growing up? It was the motion
dribble
offense. Offense.
I only ran motion. We never did Princeton.
Well,
yeah,
either way.
It's UCLA, Richard, you throw it to the side, you get the back screen, down screen.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I forgot what it was called. Maybe it was the UCLA. I never ran it. But the thing that I'm trying to say is that
ran the UCLA, dog.
Yeah, Utah ran that, yeah. But the thing with the Princeton offense is that once they kind of eliminated that, they just took plays from it versus having it be like the triangle, mm-hmm. which was continual. What we used to do, if we got hot with like Chin or Fords out, we would run it 3-4 times in a row. We would score. Then we would not run it again until like 5 minutes to go in the fourth. We're like, we gonna save this shit. We'll keep that in our back pocket. Come 5 minutes in the fourth, it's a 4-point game, and y'all didn't figure this out from the second quarter. You haven't seen it since, and then all of a sudden, the game would be over. The game would be over if you got hot with Chin, because it was like, it's a 5-point game. You ran it like multiple times. They couldn't stop it. Then by the time you go to run it again in the fourth quarter, you're just like, okay, Allie, do you remember that time in Toronto where we scored on like 10 straight possessions running the exact same play? Well, that's Chin, but everybody in the league runs it. That wasn't the play, wasn't Chin, but that's how Chin would work, where you could get six different shots for five different players running one play.
I got you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, y'all ran this one play that was crazy too. The play where you put Brian on the elbow and then you got
That's the play.
K Love, yeah, that's the same play.
It's like the back. So I would get a back. That was where I would get the backdoor lob. I would get a backdoor lob.
It's just hard because you're trying to figure out which guy to stop because you have because all three can beat you is what you're
it's
saying.
It's a read in that one moment.
Yeah,
it's read whatever. And again, if you have playmakers like Jason Kidd or LeBron James, you're like, we're gonna put Brian on the elbow. Like he's Drew Brees. If the safety drops, that's open. If the linebacker comes in, that's open. And he would just read and pick you apart. Then it just became like Channing had to knock down the corner three or I had to do this.
If I hit that first three and then it was just like, then there was no big help. So me and him, I would just say, hey, welcome to the island. Me and you going to sit out here for another six or seven plays and I'm going to come out and you're going to feel useless. You're not getting no rebounds. We're not doing nothing. We're going to just sit out here.
How much did you hate those series or did you love them? Against Cleveland,
I love every bit about just playing basketball in general. I love competition, because one thing for sure, that's something I've never shied away from is competition. That's what's gotten me to this point. So, I love everything about those series, especially the series where we took the ass to seven.
They weren't there. Channing, you had just left that year.
Yeah, they had just left. Year.
That was the most.
Yeah, that's why it went to seven. Shouldn't have traded.
Yeah, they got rid of them all. And they got rid of the dudes that knew how to do what they needed to do.
I remember getting on the bus after, because I those games in Indy, 1-2, I believe, you guys blew them out by 30. Each home game, you guys blew one another out.
This is a wild stat. This is a wild stat.
It was wild.
We played 28 quarters. We won 24 of them and lost the series.
Yeah. And I remember that getting on the bus after game one, or game two.
How do you do that?
I don't know when it was, but I asked Bron. I was like, yo, do you think you guys can beat them? And he was just like, yo, we got to figure this shit out.
Look, no disrespect to those dudes on the Cavs team because I know them, but that was not a very good Cavs team.
It wasn't one of the better ones. I can't say it. The year before, and then prior years were better teams, obviously. But the year before was definitely a better team.
Yeah, that was that 17. That was 17 we played against you guys in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't know how we won that. And
Channing hit a game winner and he didn't even know.
No, but we swept. Paul George was on.
But I was cussing Nate out there.
Yo. Okay, so really quickly. Because
you should have played me.
Yeah, because then we want to wrap this up so Thad can get.
Oh no, I want to ask Thad a question, right? And
I got one more too.
You know Paul George, you played with him and he played great last night. I did the Dallas game. And you've seen this kind of up and down with him, right? And it's not just up and down because we as players know you're not all going to just have 30-point games every single night. What is it about Paul that you feel, and it's just more of a conversation of just we saw the success in Indiana. We know how good he is, but it's just every once in a while, it feels like he gets a little bit in his own way when it's just oh, dude, you could be the best player on the floor whenever you want. I'm confused as to cause you played with him and I know he gets a lot of heat, but the only thing that pisses me off about the heat is y'all motherfuckers acting like this ain't a bad dude right now. You know? So what is it that you feel like it's just, he's just, what is it about his rhythm and flow?
I mean, one thing for sure, once he get into the rhythm and flow, it's hard. You ain't stopping him. There's no stopping him. But I think sometimes that rhythm and flow that he does get in, it takes away from the team that's around him, right? They say great players have to be able to make, his teammates better around him. But you got another great player standing right next to him. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think he goes into the shadow of Kawhi.
Why?
Because Kawhi gets so much love, as far as him winning championships and him always looking like he's putting the team on his back. And because both of them some bad motherfuckers, but I think that when they come back and during the season, they limit the guys on their team because they're now coming back from only playing 50 games in a season. And then coming back in the playoffs, and now they got to play 40. And then now you turn – that's why you think about Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell. You turn Lou Will into a standstill shooter.
That's not his game.
What he is. You know what I'm saying? And then you get Montrezl Harrell, who is your best pick and roll player with Lou Will. Now he becomes null and void.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think they have to, like, well, one, when you ask about Paul, I think he has to add those components to his game to be able to, like, make other people better. Like, we know he can score with the best.
Yeah.
We know he can score with the best of them. We know he can, like, go out there and defend the best guys. But, like, when those double teams and triple teams come, we know you can score on them. But, like, you got to, like, trust your teammates a little bit more and make those guys a little bit better. And not saying he doesn't try, but, you know, I think that, you know, that has to be a game, a part of his game that evolves because, like, one thing about, like, Kawhi on that Toronto team, he willed that team through, but he also had a point guard that made everybody better.
Yeah. So his – but and that was the one thing about Kawhi is that he legitimately is just a great scorer defender. He is the prototypical old-school two-guard, mm-hmm. the Ray Allens, the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants. Right. It's like, listen, I'm a fucking shooting guard. My job is to shoot and to guard. Y'all do all the other stuff, right? It's like – but people don't understand that. Like, people don't.
He said that in the game, too.
Did he really?
Yeah, he's telling that to somebody. He's like, well, fuck. He's like, I should have shot the motherfuckers. Yeah, if you weren't going to do shit with it.
Well, I just think that's why Rondo is so important on that team. Like, PG, at his best, is a guy that's coming off those stagger screens. What's up, Phoenix?
Oh, my God. What's up, Thaddeus? Say what's up to Allie. Say hi.
Lord have mercy.
Hi.
How old is this dude? Like, his head is as big as mine, dude.
But like, okay, here's my random question. What? You're from Mississippi, correct?
I'm bald.
No, I'm from New Orleans.
My son, he goes, my son goes, you're bald.
But
you gotta stay off Twitter. You gotta stay off Twitter, man. I'm telling you, this dude, man.
So I'm gonna switch back to the PG thing. I just think that, like, when you ask PG to be this guy, he like switches off the part of what makes him elite, right? He's a okay. I don't know what his, you know, career total or career high is in assists, but it's not 15, 16. It may be 9 or 10, where mine is 7, right? And that was just a game where I was just like, oh, these fools is hot. Here we go, right?
Right.
But like for me, the Clippers' biggest issue is they don't have a point guard. And when PG needs to get going, he puts his head down and goes to his move that he's been working on. Same with Kawhi. When they bring the ball up the court, everyone stands. And so I think he's not getting the right type of he's trying to be the best player he can, but he's not being put in situations based on their personnel to be successful.
Right.
Right? They're like, hey, make me a cake. Here, we have, we ain't got no flour.
You got everything but the eggs, the water.
Right, but what are you doing with that? So it's just like, just go play defense and wait for Kawhi. Like, both him and Kawhi go, none of these dudes can guard me, so why would I pass? Like, Kyrie didn't win until LeBron was there.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyrie will win, I think, now because James Harden is there. But if you notice, James Harden will bring the ball up, he'll throw it to Kyrie. He'll say, give that joint back. He'll get Joe Harris 3 or 4. Kyrie doesn't have to think about anybody else except who's in front, right? And then if once he get in that rhythm, and you play with Tony Parker, Richard, so it's like, it's the same thing. Tony would get a double, he gonna hit you with that quick dump off. But until he gets a double, he like, okay, layup, floater, layup, floater, layup, floater, 9-1-1 pass, right? Like,
That's like my first year in Indy, like we had Jeff Teague. He's a good point guard. He knows how to orchestrate and run the show. And I think that like the first year in Indy, we didn't excel with the team that we had because like we wasn't using our point guard to his full strength. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why that's why Jeff was like, all right, I'm leaving. I'm going somewhere else. He goes to, I think, Minnesota. And, you know, other guys, they dip and we change the whole structure of the team. And then we get Vic and Domas. But then we also had two point guards, two solid-ass point guards, Corey Joseph and Darren Collison, who know how to set the table and run the show. So, like, point guards are like a huge commodity in what we try to do as teams. Like, if you don't have a point, it's going to be hard. And I think, like with the Bulls now, like, our point guard is obviously Kobe White, but he's a scoring guard. right? So he's still learning how to set the table. That's why, shit, you start using me as the de facto point guard. I'm up there looking like I'm Braun now and shit, making all these reads. You know what I'm saying? but definitely, I think definitely for the Clippers, like, they point guard situation, they have to figure that out. Like Rondo does help them, but to a certain extent, because you're still playing Pat Bev. And
do you think that's why they made the adjustment in Dallas there in game three with Reggie Jackson starting? Do you think that factored
I mean, I think it does. I think it factors because, like when you put Pat Bev out there, like, he's out there to defend. Mm-hmm. He's gonna be able to knock down some shots and
No, Lillard, we're not gonna disrespect Pat Bev. I'm not talking Channing. I'm talking to Channing. Channing's like,
Pat Bev is not a good shooter.
I'm not saying he's a good shooter, but he can knock down shots. Rondo's not a good shooter, but he can knock down some shots for you.
Yeah, they can knock down some shots. They're not gonna. I ain't saying they shooting the motherfuckers at a high clip. First of all, they only gonna shoot two or three of them motherfuckers a game. You know, to try to keep somebody honest. But he gonna get your team some steals. He gonna be a pest. But like, Luka is not feared by that. He doesn't fear that. You know what I'm saying? He exposes the Clippers every single year.
Yeah,
like he exposing the shit out of them.
Yo,
like,
he's the one player.
So he's looking for that switch.
He's one of the few players that I never got to play against because I retired. Like, the year I retired was the year he showed up. I just want to see it because I'd be amazed,
Richard,
at the way he does it. And I'm watching it, and I'm just like, I've never seen anything like this. Because even like LeBron wasn't knocking down 28 footers when he came in, right? And this is not a comparison. It's more of just saying that Luka goes 30, 10, and 10. Bron does 30, 10, and 10. It's in very different ways. But like, you're like, Luka's shooting, you know, 32 footers, step backs, like random shots. And I'm like, and can't nobody guard this dude? I'm like, and it's like,
he gets all this crazy ass space. You like, how the hell is he getting all this space? He got that like big ass body for a point guard. He knows how to get into the lane. He's throwing fakes and shit, like behind the back passes that you didn't even know the guy was there, like all types of shit. So it's like his basketball IQ along with his skill level
is
like
crazy.
Insane. And he can probably do this shit for the next 20 years because he's not playing athletic.
Yeah, he's not playing fast.
he's not fast, but he's quick to go from point A to point B.
Right.
He sets people up. His setups are some of the best in the league. I played him one time, and my guy, Mike Procopio, he was the assistant coach at that time, the development coach.
MP.
I was like, how good is this dude, right? Nibbles. I was like, how good is this dude? He goes, Channing, this dude is next level. So I said, all right, let me see. The first play, he's dribbling left-handed. So I'm like, okay, he's going to shoot this left step back. I went to go swipe for he picks it up. He picks it up with his left hand and whizzes this thing to the corner. I said, oh shit, okay, you that dude then. Because he wasn't even paying attention to me. He whizzed this thing by my ear like this. Shoot. It's right to the corner on a dot. I said, oh, okay. I said, you different. You different. You could just pass, you know, and we're double teaming him. And he's still like, all right, stop it, y'all. He's like, hey, stop it. Right? You hear a dog barking. You're like, man, shut up. assist. And then he just knows he's never rushed.
Dude had 46, 9, and 9. He had 46, 9, and 9 against the biggest, most athletic defenders this league had. The only team that has more length and defenders than them, I would probably say, is maybe Philly with
I would say the Lakers.
No, not from – they don't have the perimeter defense. I'm saying perimeter defense.
Lakers are the number one defense in the league, though.
I said perimeter defense for the 19th time.
They are the best perimeter defensive team in the NBA.
Defense. I'm not talking about defense. Okay, let me wait. Let's go. Right. Let's do this. Let's go. Wait. Right. Let's go back.
Really quick. You get like literally like 4 minutes.
No, really, really quickly. Okay. When you look at Ben Simmons, when you look at Matisse Thybul, when you look at who they have on the perimeter, then when you look at Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Morris, Pat Beverly, when you look at the Lakers on the perimeter, you're talking about KCP and Caruso.
Stop it. Like, stop it.
Dennis
LeBron ain't playing no defense. LeBron ain't playing no defense.
Dennis Schroeder is the most 94 feet.
Thank
impossible
you.
Screen that I've
he's the worst.
94 feet. And don't,
I love Schroeder. I love.
Do not.
I think Richard, you're getting caught up in the name. I don't know how much Lakers you watch.
I'm not getting caught up in the name. Kawhi Leonard is a two-time.
Caruso is solid.
Kawhi Leonard is a two-time defensive player of the year. Paul George is a multi-time first team all defender.
And they're getting barbecued, Richard.
I'm gonna need. I'm gonna need you to go check the numbers. Because the numbers don't lie. And with that said, Thad, you're amazing. We could keep going on and on.
I love that. Thank you, man.
But with that said, we want to thank the Wagner family of Camus Vineyards because they always supply us with all the most amazing, delicious wine that we always drink on this podcast. And because of them and us, we want to also extend that to you, Thad. So we will be sending you a couple bottles as well to enjoy with your family. So we hope you enjoyed this podcast. It got a little.
It was great. We gotta do this. We gotta do this again.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we'll get that. This was gonna happen. You keep watching all these. I know it's tough. Some players. I was one of those. When the season was over, I ain't watching no more basketball. I don't give a shit who wins. We're going to have you on again, but we need to break down some games. We need to break down some games. We'll bring you on in like the Western Conference Finals, and we'll just be like, yo.
You should totally. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be fun, man.
No, for sure. I watch the games. I've been watching them. So
I turned the shit off.
Maybe we could. We like to do Twitter spaces every once in a while. We could bring you in and be a host with us. Roger Mendez Twitter.
For sure.
We do games. For sure. Have players on, et cetera. So cool. Awesome. You're great.
Man, appreciate you, Thad.
Thank you so much.
Road Tripping.
Hey, Road Trippin' fam. We are excited to let you know that Road Trippin' is proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played NBA Daily Fantasy on FanDuel before? Well, check this out. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Why should you play on FanDuel NBA? Well, for one, it is easy to use when it comes to their app. What's not to love about that? But also, for example, they offer different and unique contests across sports in relation to your skill level. Oh yeah, and get this. You can play for big prizes, single game contests for the biggest national matches, and enter contests for as low as 5 cents. That's right, 5 cents. Simply incredible. So again, let's recap. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Enter URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin to play now and get your deposit bonus. That's URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin so they know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win.